Well, thunderstorms have forced NASA to call off the Shuttle Discovery's launch to the International Space Station early Tuesday. Launch managers said they would try again on Wednesday. We'll keep monitoring that one all week. When we come back, let's take your phone calls with Stephen Schwartz right here on Coast to Coast AM. Tell us again, Stephen, about the technique that allows us to look into our own future.
Well, it's another one of those adaptations, George, of the remote viewing research. We know from the research that the easiest thing for a person to do is to see their own timeline, to see their own narrative, as it were. And so this is a technique that I developed. It's part of the crisis conduct set. And it was essentially designed to help people create a sort of map to guide them into the future. And what I do is I ask them to go forward in time to a date of their choosing. Let's say, for an instance, that you were a person working in an office and you wanted to change jobs and you weren't quite sure which job to go or what to go for. And so, but you'd made the decision that then the next year you're going to do it. So I would say to you, okay, well, pick 15 months because then you'll be past that point of decision. All right, now 15 months into the future, so it's now September, October, November, if I've done the math right, it's now November of 2011. So I've probably done the math wrong, but anyway, you get the point. So you go forward in time, and I take you through a relaxation, and then I ask you, very much like the 2050s. It was an adaptation of that. And you are now at the date in the future that you have chosen, not that I have chosen, but you have picked. And I say to you, okay, you're standing in front of your place where you live, and what do you see? And then you go to your job, the place where you spend your time during the day, and you describe it. And let me tell you, since we're doing a radio conversation, I was going to do a radio interview with another host. We will leave this anonymous. And she had asked me if I would send her the Looking Into Your Future CD.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sent it to her, and I told her, now, this is not, you don't listen to this like a lecture or something.
Right.
You know, it's not in your car. You have to take part in it. It's an experience. And, of course, she didn't pay any attention to me. So she said, and she wrote me all this afterwards. She said, I was about to do the interview with you the next day and that evening, but the day before, I put the CD on and I was kind of working on something and not paying much attention. But then all of a sudden, I heard you say, now you're standing in front of the place where you live. And I thought, aha, I'm going to see whether this really works. Because she said, I had just put in a bid on a house. And I knew exactly what this house looked like. It was a two-story house, had a big wooden door. So she said, I gave myself over to the experience, and you said to me, okay, look down at your feet. What do you see? Now look up. You see the door. The reason you look down at your feet, by the way, is to fix yourself in the picture. And look at the door. And she said, and when I did that, I looked at it, and it was a big glass door on a single-story house. And I thought to myself, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. So she said, I just dismissed it, and we did the interview, and I wondered why she was quite cold when we did the interview.
Yeah.
Anyway, she wrote to apologize, and then she said, but a few days later, our realtor called and said to us, well, I'm sorry, the deal fell through, and you can't have the house. And she said, you know, we were really focused on this house and were very despondent over not being able to get it. And about a week later, a friend called me while we were just sort of really chewing over the fact we'd lost this house and said, you know, this probably isn't anything you'd be interested in, but there's this really nice house that I saw that's got a for sale sign. You ought to go over and take a look at it. And she said, so I said to my husband, well, okay, let's go over and take a look at it. So they got in the car and they drove over. And she said, as soon as I drove up, I recognized it. It was the house that I had seen in the Looking Into Your Future experience. It was a one-story house with a big glass door. And she said, now I live in it, and I just love this house. And I wanted to tell you, it worked.
I love it. Let's go to the calls. Melody in San Diego on the wild card line. Go ahead, Melody.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm interested in the self-healing and harmonic healing. I've taken a couple of different kinds of healing courses. I made a list here of at least 8 different ones, and I know there are a lot more. And I'm wondering, what's your thought about this versus being a newbie and you know, taking all the classes versus not taking the classes and doing self-healing and healing on others?
Well, those are very good questions. I couldn't have asked for better. The first thing I would tell you is any course that tells you this is the only way you can do it, just ask for your money back.
None of them have done that.
No, but some do. Trust me, I've had lots of people ask me this question. So that's the first thing, is there is no one way to do healing. The second thing I would tell you about healing is that you have the ability to do it. It is innate to your being a human being. And the question is, you want to find the right technique that works for you, that allows you to fully express this capacity within yourself. Now, I can't tell you what the right way is because I don't know you well enough. But if, as you look around at the various course options, and there are lots and lots of things like this out there, you want to find one that you resonate with, that you feel good about the people that you get involved with, they're not charging a lot of money. That's another thing.
They all do.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't, because this is something that everybody can do. And as you will discover if you look at my stuff, I keep my prices very low because I don't think you should be charging a lot of money for this. So that's the second thing. The third thing I would say to you is that you should practice it. It's a discipline. It's like learning a new computer program. You practice it for a while. If you feel like it really is working and you're resonating with it, you feel that your heart is attached and engaged with it, then you go forward. If you get into it and it doesn't feel that way, it seems kind of mechanical or I don't know, whatever, it just you don't make a connection, then you just drop it and go on. There are lots of ways to get up the mountain. Now the harmonic healing, the healing that I did. I do courses on healing, but this is not about so much about healing others. This is about healing yourself, because the reason I created these CDs is I had people just like you who called me up or wrote me emails and said, you know, I got this thing. What can I do for myself? How do I, you know, if other people aren't sending me healing, is there anything I can do? And so I designed an experience which is based on the healing research, which is designed to allow you to stimulate your own innate healing capacity. It's the same thing, as I said earlier, that happens in the placebo response. It may work for you. I mean, you know, this is not the only way. Again, I stress that. There are many ways up the mountain. You want to find one that makes you feel good to do it. You feel like you're making a really strong connection. But the most important part is you just have to practice it regularly. It's just like learning a computer program. You know, it seems awkward and clumsy at the beginning, but after a little while, it just becomes second nature.
Okay, next up we go to Armand Beach in Florida. Bert, it's your turn. Hi, Bert.
Hi. I saw The Power of Intention online tonight after I asked a question from worldfocus.org on PBS. They said, go to our website and you know, let us know your opinion about Afghanistan. You know, should President Obama increase the troops? And I walked in there and I went neutral. I says, well, you know, the human spirit intrinsically wants freedom. And why do you think, you know, 5% of the world's population has the felicity, the happiness and joy of consuming 80% of the world's products? Freedom. Immediately, the comments started changing on the website. I was comment number 15. And it was serendipitous, because by the time I finished sending my message, the guy on the screen is talking about Estonia and how important freedom is, and freedom ain't free, and we really need, you know, freedom, the torch to lead the way. And I wanted to say, Stephen, the most critical thing you said tonight was when you said balance the weather on the planet. We don't know what that means. And you got to do a lot of soul searching. Is it life affirming? My goodness, you know how long it's going to take for me to figure that out? Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Okay. There's his comment, Stephen.
Okay. Well, actually, people innately know what balance means. If you don't know the details, but you understand you understand harmony. All living beings understand harmony innately.
Absolutely. Let's go to Missy in Katy, Texas, east of the Rockies. Missy, you're up.
Hi, George. Hi,
hey.
Stephen.
My
question is, if you believe you have these healing abilities, how do you develop them? Are there exercises you can do? And the reason I'm asking this is because I have it happen just automatically. People seem to be drawn to me for some reason, and the people that are drawn to me are people that have back problems. And when they come to me and tell me about these things, if they're open to being healed, for some reason my hands get really hot. And if they're not open to it, my hands don't get hot. When my hands get hot, I know then it's okay for me to go ahead and do the healing on them. And as well, the way I used to do it, when I used to try to do it when I was real young, I would take it the problem into myself and heal it inside of me and then put it back into them. But when I did that, what I found was it made me very sick.
Right.
And when I was talking to someone else, they told me that's the old way of doing it. Don't do it like that anymore because it's dangerous to your own body. But anyway, are there exercises I can do to develop
this? Yes, there are exercises. The most important thing, I mean, you've already discovered several of the fundamental principles. You have a biofeedback response that tells you when you can heal, when your hands get hot. So that's important. That's a good thing to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Because people will, if they give themselves over to this, you will become aware of when you can and should heal. Because remember, if you hold a cherished outcome, you can cause negative effects, and I can give you a number of examples of this. The main thing, though, is you can. There are lots of courses, there are lots of books you can read about this, but the main thing that I would tell you is that you develop the discipline that works for you, that has goals but not cherished outcomes. That is, you're not trying to get a specific thing to happen, but that the person's body will be brought back into balance and as in accordance with their soul purpose, or however you want to express that. And the main thing you do is you just do it regularly. It is the regular expression of the discipline that is what makes you effective. It's just like playing the piano or anything else. You know, you have to learn how to play the piano, and to keep your edge, you have to keep playing it. If you learn to play the piano and you walk away and 15 years later you come back, you'll still remember some of the basics, but you will not have the muscular memory, as it were, the physical memory that will allow you to express this. Whereas if you do it regularly, and you do it not with a cherished outcome, but with a goal that the person's body be brought into balance in accordance with their highest good, or however you want to express that, in either religious terms or non, doesn't make any difference, you will, and you practice it regularly, you will become an effective healer.
And you know what? Practice makes perfect, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You have to do this stuff. If you want to do remote viewing or anything where you want to open to non-local consciousness, you have to practice it regularly. I mean, if you think about it, we spend hours and hours and hours each day exercising certain intellectual capacities, observational capacities. We get, you know, a lot of our life is tied up with that. We spend just the smallest, briefest time, taking time out to simply allow ourselves to open to the highest and best part of us. And that's why I say if I could get everybody to meditate for 20 minutes a day, the world would be a very different place. I don't care how they meditate, I mean, what technique they use, simply that they do it.
Okay, let's go to Cleveland, Ohio. Earl, you're up with us. Hello, Earl. Earl?
Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
Can you hear me? Yes. Hello, George. Hello, Stephen.
Hi.
I've called in a couple of times, and we talked about different subjects, but tonight I'm calling in as Dr. Earl. I am a doctor of acupuncture and bioenergetic medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I studied classical energetic Chinese acupuncture as opposed to the traditional Chinese medicine. There is a slight difference. But I'd like to talk to you about two things. One is your talk about intent. I have taught acupuncture, and I always taught my students that one of the main things that makes the acupuncture work is your intent. All the acupuncture points have several different things that they can deal with, but it is your intention that makes the difference of what you want to happen.
Excellent point.
I tried to teach some people who were psychics how to douse. We had a situation where a voodoo lady came in and filled the house with different things to zap the energy. And I tried to teach them how to do the dowsing, but I was surprised they couldn't do it. But I was able to douse and find these different relics that she had placed in different areas of the house to get rid of them so we could remove that negativity that she put there. So that intention is a very important aspect. The other thing I like to talk about is the kinesiology. In 1980, I went to a conference at the ARE, the Association for Research Enlightenment,
mm-hmm.
Eric Casey,
right.
And I met a Dr. John Diamond, who taught applied and behavioral kinesiology.
Mm-hmm.
A month later, I went to New York to take his formal class, and I was very impressed with it. From that, I developed a test for AIDS that needs no body fluids whatsoever, but it's based on quantum physics and kinesiology. And I'd like to just suggest, Stephen, with all due respect, I think there might have been a slight flaw in your kinesiology testing. It's not really about muscle strength. It's really about the elasticity of the muscle. You have to look at the elasticity. It's the tensile strength, not the muscle strength, that's important.
George, all I can tell you is I don't disagree with you. I went to the kinesiology academies that taught this technique, and I said to them, what is it we're looking for? I want you to give me the best case scenario of what it is you are trying to do. And what they gave me was the muscular resistance. I thought it was going to work. I was very surprised that this experiment did not work. But as I said earlier to George, I held the intention that I would learn the truth. So are there other ways it could be done? Absolutely. What I did was mimic the technique that is taught by the established institutions on this in the way that they did it, in the setting that they did it.
Stephen, let's come back and take final phone calls with you. Very fast night tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Underground tunnels in New York, animal mutilations, strange UFO phenomena. Our guest, Phil Imbrogno, joins us on our next Coast to Coast show. Stephen, what are your next projects?
Well, the next thing I'm working on is a project, one of the remote viewing archaeology projects to locate previously undiscovered cave art in France. And we're going to probably do the field work next year. It's taken, these international things take a certain amount of time to put together and actually make happen. But we've collected pretty good data. Actually, George McMullen, the very last session he ever did was on this project, and so I have a good feel about that. But the idea is to find cave art about 35,000 years old that would help us to better understand early man and what their life was like and about. So I'm working on that. Larry Dossey, who...
I know Larry well.
Yeah, has been a guest on your show. Larry and I have just finished a paper on intention effects and observer effects, which we're going to send into one of the medical journals. And I am going to write a book, because so many people have written me and told me I have to do it. I'm going to write a book on the 8 laws of social transformation.
Perfect. Let's go to get some more calls. You ready?
Yep.
Colville, Washington, west of the Rockies. Bill, it's you. Go ahead, Bill.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
I had a comment and a question. My comment was yourself and people like Lynn McTaggart seem to have emphasis on the power of the mind with intent. And then comes along people like Joseph Clinton Pierce, Drew McKisledack, and Greg Braden, who are finding that the intelligence of the heart, it seems to me that the power of the mind is the activator, but it's actually the intelligence of the heart, the trigger mechanism. I think mass consciousness is starting to catch this now.
Well, let me say that there's no contradiction. My view is it is not just the mind that you are talking about. It is the whole person that is expressing the intention. That is your heart. And what happens, based on the research, again, I always go back to that. What happens is that you open to a part of yourself that exists outside of space and time. And in order to do that, you can't just do that mentally. You have to do that with a whole heart. You know, George and I were talking a little earlier about this. You have to have an intention to be compassionate and life-affirming. If you tried to do it just mentally, it wouldn't work. You have to get your whole beingness into this process. And the techniques that I teach, I don't know about others, but the techniques that I teach are involved with getting all of you into the game. It's like anything. It's like playing sports. You know, if you're a football player and you're just playing it sort of mentally, technically, well, you might be very good if you have a lot of physical capability, but you will never be great at it any more than you will be a great golfer. I mean, if you listen to people who are really good at what they do, they will tell you, you know, moving into the zone, there have been books written about this, that you have to engage the wholeness of your being in the process.
There you go. What makes football players, for example, family members, always so good, like the Manning family, okay? Is that genetics or training?
Well, I think it's both. There is genetics. You have to have a gene set that's going to give you the physical capability to be a good footballer, basketballer, whatever. But then, as in anything else, whether it's healing, remote viewing, or playing golf or football, you have to develop a technique for expressing that capacity within yourself. And there's no universal way to do it. You have to find, you try out various things and you find the thing that works for you that allows you to express your full beingness. And if you look at people who are really good at anything, it doesn't matter what it is, they all talk about this, you know, I get to a certain place where I'm just in the zone, or I have this feeling I'm out of time, yep, and I'm just in this place where it all works. Or, I mean, over and over again, great people at anything discuss this. Brahms said, for instance, when he was composing, he said, I'm in an altered state of consciousness, and in that state of consciousness, I can hear the music, and what I do is just write it down.
Let's go to La Puente, California. Javier, first-time caller. Hi, Jav.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, how are you both doing tonight?
Good. Thank
Fine.
You.
Okay, yes, I needed to know, ask you a question. I've been having a problem with a neurological problem,
mm-hmm,
dealing with seizures. had this since I was like 13 years old, and I just needed to know if there's a case where I could use some kind of technique of meditation to help me with this process.
Well, first of all, let me tell you, I'm not a physician, and I can't diagnose over the phone, even if I was.
Yeah.
What I can tell you is that you could use the, for instance, the technique that I developed, the harmonic healing for self. There's no downside. Nothing bad is going to happen to you. It has no negative side effects. It's worth trying. You'll find out whether it's going to work for you. I can't give you a guarantee. All I can say to you is that there are techniques which when you practice them regularly, will help you gain control over aspects of your body. Whether it will work in your particular case, I can't say. All I can say is it has similar kinds of things have worked for other people.
How long is the meditation techniques?
Well, the meditation technique that I teach is 20 minutes. And it is designed specifically for Western minds. The healing experience, the harmonic healing experience, that's about 40 minutes. And it's designed to be used as often as you feel moved to do so. And it takes you through an experience where you go into yourself and you get in touch with your own body and its processes. So all of these things, 20 minutes, the meditation technique, 40 minutes for the healing, the looking into your future experience is about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, something like that. None of them take a great deal of time. What they require is that you be willing to give yourself over to focusing on this. And it requires a certain amount of not effort so much as a commitment.
Okay, let's go to Dayton, Ohio now. Marlena, you're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Okay, great. Hi. This seems to be what I do in my prayers. It seems to be exactly the same thing. I think positive. I pray for all of us. I pray for the evil people to be stopped. I pray for wars to stop. I pray for love and peace. And I pray for a beautiful planet. And if we would all do this, can we help each other?
The answer is yes.
And I've often thought, I don't have a computer, but I've often thought if I could get that across to George Norrie to tell everyone else, and we would all do it, we can succeed.
Well, you just did it more eloquently than either George or I, and
sure
I think
did.
You just said it to about 4 million people.
Thanks. Let's go next to Kansas City, Kansas, east of the Rockies. Hello, Rick. Rick, you with us? Nope, I guess not. What happened to Kansas? Natalie's in New Orleans, though. Hello, Natalie.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I love your show, and I'm sure everybody says that, but it's definitely important.
You could never hear it enough, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's something that I think should be out there more, and it makes people like me feel less alone. But anyway, so I just called in to talk about a story really fast and then just kind of talk about some stuff with him. I was out in Los Angeles during Katrina. I went out there to visit a friend and ended up staying with a lady who I met, spur of the moment. And her cat was acting really weird, so I talked to animals a lot, so I tried to talk to the cat. I've experimented with this a few times when I was a kid and with people. It happens, like I'll have visions and dreams and feelings about things, or I'll know something about just weird things, like I can see inside of things, or I can get a vibe about something and just know what's going to happen, and dreams that happen the next day and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, my great-grandmother was a healer. My mom told me stories about her, about how she would just touch her hand and make, like a wart disappear or do certain things. But anyway, I experimented with the cat when I was out there in Los Angeles, and basically I just put my hand all over the cat's body, and I got the vibe that the cat had a tumor in its stomach. And I kept telling the lady to take it to the vet, and she finally listened to me, and they were able to save the cat's life, which was really cool. But I want to experiment more with the thing. I believe that it is something that some human beings are capable of doing here on Earth. But I wanted to experiment more with it, with humans and with helping people. And for a while, people were telling me, like, I would talk to psychics about it, and they would tell me to be careful with your energy and not get infected by other people's energy when you do laying on of the hands and things like that. But I'm not really worried about that. I don't feel that that's how I am.
Stephen, can a healer take on somebody's illness?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they can.
So you got to be careful there.
That's one of the things that when you learn how to heal, that you learn to not take it on.
It killed Edgar Cayce, didn't it? All that work.
Yeah, I mean, he committed suicide in service in a way. He was told to only give two readings. But I want to address this lady's question before we what you might do is, since we brought up Edgar Cayce, that's probably a good place to start. You can call the ARE and tell them you want to join the GLAD Helpers group. They have a healing prayer group of people who are scattered all over the country, all over the world, I guess. And they send out a list every month, and you can join with these people to send healing, and you can also, they will help you organize a healing prayer group amongst your own friends if you want to. So there are a number of ways that you can take your abilities. I thank you for the story of the cat. I happen to have a cat, so I relate to that story very strongly. But you can begin to work with this part of yourself. And if you'll call the ARE, it's 757-428-3588 is the number. And tell them I told you to call and that you want to be involved with the GLAD Helpers program. Then they'll pass you on and get you hooked up with that.
GLAD Helpers. Tucson, Arizona we go. Hello, Mary. It's your turn.
Very interesting show.
Yes.
I'd like to relate a couple of experiences. I am a physician. I've done life work. My life work has been spent in emergency medicine. And I trained in New York City, Manhattan. And I began working in the emergency room in Brooklyn and in Harlem, and these are pretty serious places to work.
Yeah.
I used to get on the subway. I lived in Lower Manhattan, about 3 blocks north of the World Trade Center. When I would get on the subway, by the time I would get to the hospital via the subway, just before arriving, I'd have this overwhelming sense that I'm going to see A, B, C, or D. For example, I'd say, oh, geez, I'm going to have a lot of cardiac coming in tonight, or I'm going to have neurology problems, or accidents, you know, gun trauma, sure, that kind of thing. And I immediately start referencing some of my materials going over. And as soon as I hit the emergency room, there it is, exactly what I anticipated. And I've had at least 4 experiences during my career in which I have pronounced patients DEAD, and only after working on them, that is, they're dead,
right,
after working on them with heroic measures for a sustained time, for example, 40 minutes, an hour, hour and a half. There
wow.
is a period, there is a moment that every doctor senses during these times of heroic measures, life-saving measures, that one must read these sensibilities of not only oneself, but also of those surrounding, assisting the physician in this heroic measure. And that line is very, very thin, very nebulous. And that is the line when one must know when the measures that you're evoking are heroic and when they become sacrilegious. And so you look for clues for the nurses and et cetera who are with you. And so one specific case I can recount was a 4-year-old child We had worked on this child innately for at least 45 minutes. I took my cues from the nurses. Dr. Blank, won't you let it go? You know, that was the overwhelming expression, collective expression. And so I just finally made the pronouncement because there are certain other biological signs that present themselves when you know it's over. And that sign had already occurred, and so I said thank you to the help and all my professional colleagues, and go get the parents. Let's give this horrible news. And during that anteroom, I was leaned over this child, these golden ringlets hanging down from the table, blonde hair. And in my arrogance, I just said, oh, God, I have never lost a child, in my arrogance. And just at that moment, this hand comes up, pulls out the ET tube, and cries and yells out. And I jump back.
Unbelievable.
I still get chill bumps. I still get chill bumps from relating that story.
I get chill bumps listening to it.
What a way to end the night, Stephen. My God.
Wow, that is a... Thank you very much for sharing that story.
Very, very powerful moment. God, can you imagine that?
Wow. That's pretty intense, absolutely. Well, you know, the thing is that stories like this, there are hundreds of them. People are having these kinds of experiences, but we don't talk about them in our culture. We don't acknowledge them. We don't integrate them into the culture.
And like you said, Stephen, they are very real. They are happening all the time.
Oh, the capacity we have to serve the good is so much greater than we understand.
Until next time, Stephen Schwartz, my friend, your website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.